The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Becker on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Guys, the wife and kid are out of the house, so I've opened up the door to the bonus room, so the German Shepherds are roaming. So if you hear something loud, you know, hear some barking, that's probably coming from my place. We'll see what happens. I may have to shoo him out of here. Let's go down to Houston. Let's bring in our friend Sean Salisbury, who's on the line with us. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I hope you guys and the fans in the great state of Tennessee are doing well, too, and safe, and looking forward to sports like everybody else and getting out a little bit and getting some vitamin D, but got to do what we got to do and making something happen, man. You guys know that, so I'm hanging in there. Thank you.
Right back at you. I want to get your quick thoughts on The Last Dance. What have you thought as an athlete watching, you know, just the story of Michael Jordan and the Bulls dynasty? What have you thought through 8 episodes?
Well, one is I would caution any other players at any level when you're watching this to think, because Josh McDaniels tried to be Belichick and it didn't work real well as a head coach, that you got to be you, that Michael Jordan's unique style. Now, there may be some like him. First off, I'll tell you this, we will never – in our lifetime, in your lifetime, any of us sitting in this conversation, you will never see, you know how they say, oh, he's the next Michael Jordan. You're not seeing that. In our lifetime, you will not see him again. And when I say that, is there guys talented? LeBron's gifted and talented. We got a lot of talented players in all sports. But when you combine talent with when you're the most talented, you work the hardest, and you've got an attitude that actually gets – satisfaction out of carving your heart out, feeding it to you on a platter, and smirking at you while you're dying in front of him. And I don't mean literally in a sports term I'm talking about. Unbelievable. And I'm fascinated with it, guys. All this stuff that we thought, you know, that we all knew about Michael and, hey, winning 6 championships and what a great player and what, you know, he loves to bet on himself and how competitive he was. But it doesn't even touch the surface with it's not popular to be a leader. I guess what I take away from this is I love him more than I thought I did. Charlie, and I don't mean to name drop. Charles Barkley's a very dear friend of mine, and we've talked about Michael in years past about what a competitor, just all the stuff, not dirt. I'm talking about good stuff. And I thought, man. And, you know, Charles, all the years he's known him. And so you go into this with your expectations, and it exceeded him because now I know he's got editing power and all that, but, man, guys, think about that. It's not popular to be a leader, man. Great leaders, most of them aren't liked very well at times because you can't be because half the room doesn't like you because you got to grab a guy by the nape of the neck, not literally. You got to get in a guy's face. Then you got to put your arm around one. You got to challenge another. You got to understand people. And there's a difference. I always believe that you manage tasks and you lead people. And it may be an unconventional way because not a lot of guys – because Jordan, everything he did, he asked you to do, he'd have done it and beat you in sprints, beat you in the film room, beat you in smoking a cigar, beat whatever it is. So I'm just fascinated with the level of sniper mentality that he had. We knew he had it, but you talk about aim small, miss small that the sniper has. This dude would find your weakness or take your strength and turn it into a weakness mentally, physically, emotionally, to the point where you were like, I don't want any more of this. I'm done. And I'm just fascinated by when you get the best of all of them and you put it into one dude, There's a reason why he is the best basketball player ever. No disrespect to LeBron James. LeBron's the most physical specimen on the court I've ever seen. He'll never be Michael because there's a difference. LeBron wants to win and works hard and does it all. Michael Jordan's refusal to lose at any expense will never be, we will not see it in our lifetime that it will ever be redone. We just won't.
Who did you play with that came the closest to being wired differently than anybody else you ever played with? How would you answer that?
That is a great question. I'll be honest with you, man, and I think every team, and when we say wired, and I know what you meant is how none of them are, I've never played with a guy Jordan-esque wise when it comes to that, but I think about, I mean, I wasn't one of them, but I sure as hell played with the Warren Moons and the, I've been on a team, you know, Marcus Allen won the Heisman my freshman year. I've been on a team with Eric Dickers. That's Chris Carter. I start to look around at all the great players, me not being one of them, but Steve Largent taking something from us. Largent was close, but Steve never cussed. Steve never swore, never did that. But I'll tell you a real quick story. I'm sitting in the locker room in my rookie year in Seattle, and I'd follow him and David Craig and Kenny Easley around like a baby duck following a mother duck. We're sitting in there before practice, and this is during training camp. And on our complex then in Seattle in Kirkland, Washington, you could look out the glass through the locker room, through to the weight room, all the way out to the practice field. And I'm sitting next to a wide receiver who was a rookie trying to make the team, another wide receiver and a running back and myself, all of us rookies. We look out through the complex, and about a half hour before practice, there's a guy in full uniform running the route tree. Running the route tree with nobody else out there throwing him football. It was Steve Largent. Well, later that, and I'm thinking, this is ironic. Us rookies are trying to make a team sitting in here, and I'm sitting next to a receiver. And at that point in time, he, that year, became in 1986 the greatest single receiver of all time, catches-wise, is out there working. So he had that mentality of, here's how we do it. They don't catch 100 balls after. Marcus Allen came close because he would, every time he touched the ball, run 60 yards on every time, jog back, and John Robinson put him back in the huddle. John Randall in Minnesota. Every team I've been on has had a guy, when we were successful, that was different. And I think great teams need him, whether it's a whack job, whether it's a Dennis Rodman approach. I mean, we all have them. The guy who wants to fight you every time you look at him different, the guy who is first to the meeting room, and then the guy who kind of has it all. So I played on every good team I played on. There was at least one dude that didn't, he was E.F. Hutton. He didn't have to say much, but when he did, everybody listened. And then there was the same guy who led a different way, but as close, I can name a guy from every team who had some sort of characteristic of Jordan that would not accept you being last running. Would not accept you making the excuse that, well, I just wasn't feeling well. Would not accept the, well, oh, I'm tired after sprints. It just, that guy, and then you look at him, and then you all look at their careers, and most, 90% of them's careers ended up long, successful, and many of them with mustard-colored jackets on in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. There is no mystery. Junior Seau, another one, he practiced like you were trying to steal his family's food and money. Even on shorts and T-shirt, rookies, he would wear their ass out until they learned. Rodney Harrison, he would knock you. You come across the middle. Rodney Harrison had to be stopped by coaches at times because he was going full speed. It didn't matter. And he was willing to fight. Gee, you want to fight me for hitting it? Let's go. Yet everybody loved him. You may not have liked everything they did, but the respect factor. And it's more important for Jordan, and this is one thing I've realized, that the great ones want to be respected. They don't give a fuzzy rat's ass about being liked. And if you can be liked along the way, fine. But Belichick, Parcells, think about them all. Go through the list. How many of Tom Brady? Tom, I mean, how many of them are more, they want to win so bad that you better respect them. Liking them, eventually when the career's over, maybe you will, maybe you won't. It's the respect factor. And all the great ones I've been around are respected first and liked second. Like my dad. My dad was always my dad first and my friend second. It was never the opposite. And I think the great players all have that.
Wow, well said. Sean Salisbury on the line with us. If there's one thing that's come out of 2 months of doing shows from our homes is we've had some really, really good and candid interviews with, you know, a lot of players, you know, Eddie George and Mookie Betts and David Price, Ryan Leaf came on and told his journey. So I'm going to ask you, because we've always enjoyed our conversations with you, and this is kind of the path we went down with Ryan Leaf, and he was very open and honest on why it didn't work out. You're a competitor. You want to be is with all the greats. What was the one thing, Sean, that you felt like was the missing ingredient for your career to be different than what it was?
Are we talking about as a football player?
Yes.
As a football player, yeah. And I can – and part of this, and I've seen both ends, and I love – I appreciate the question. And I think you guys know, transparent, that I've been – I know what rock bottom looks like, so there's nothing you can ask me that would ever offend me. And I'm grateful for this question. I was the number one recruited athlete in the country. I was a high school All-American in basketball, was a – would have been drafted in baseball. And I don't say this arrogant. It just will help the story. And
sure.
Was the number one football player and the number one quarterback in America when I came out of high school. And I can remember John Robinson coming into my living room about a week before signing date. He looked at me, and he said to me, he goes, "We want you here. You're our number one choice of any recruit, blah, blah, blah." And he said, but he said this, and I distinctly remember he said, "But I'm going to tell you this." And he has his national championship ring from 78 on his finger. And he said, this was his final home visit before I signed. Before we held hats at press conferences, he said, my dad wouldn't have let me anyway. He said, we're going to put you in an environment to be successful, but whether you come to USC or not, we are still going to show up on Saturday and we are still going to win. And he left my house. My dad said, you want to be a part of that. So that I had that drive in me. I shredded my knee twice at USC. And so I went in and I played my entire NFL career with an anterior cruciate ligament. So that physically didn't allow me to do a few of the things I wanted, but it really comes down to this. It wasn't because a lot of guys overcome knee injuries. Hell, a lot worse than that. I mean, look at Alex Smith, what he's coming through. So excuses are for losers, and I'm not going to make that. I wish I'd have been fully healthy, as we all do. For me, it came down to this. Somewhere along the line, maybe after I've shredded my knee twice and didn't get drafted when I was, according to Mel Kiper, going to be a first-round pick after my sophomore year, and you start to buy into that hype and believe those things, and Mel's good, but you say, okay, that's me. After I shredded my knee twice and get drafted, I lost some confidence, thinking, well, man, everybody else doesn't believe in me. What about me? And my dad said, get your butt back in there, go make a team, and you'll play. And I played 10 years. But the thing why I didn't have, I think, more success is I had trouble, and I train quarterbacks every day. Is it something hit me along the way in my career? Because in high school, I never cared. I'd throw an interception, boom, I'll come back and get you the next time. There was a handful of years in my career in the NFL, I didn't get over bad plays quick enough. I just didn't. I throw an incompletion that I should have had a completion. And the rearview mirror was bigger than the windshield for me. And I let it fester, which caused me to make two or three more bad plays. And then you'd get into it and go. But to sustain the greatness that those great ones have, even after being the number one recruit, I used to be able to do something along the line. It hit me. And I did not get over bad plays fast enough. And I tell quarterbacks now, and I'll let you, and I know you guys got to go, is that you need to get over good plays and bad plays equally quick. And had I known that lesson for me, like had I had the same mentality in high school as I did in the NFL or when I showed up on USC's campus, injuries or not, I would have been a great player. But because, and I don't mean that I would have been, but I mentally beat myself up so bad that I didn't get over bad plays quick enough, and it cost me sustaining, and that's why other guys beat me out and should have when I was a backup and the times I started for a few games and then, oh, have a bad game, and you let it fester. That was my biggest issue. I couldn't get over it quick enough.
Boy, the mental side of the game is so fascinating to study. Sean Salisbury is with us, and he is with Sports Talk 790 down in Houston. So, Sean, we've talked to you from time to time about the status of the Houston Texans. How do you feel about things? Have they improved themselves? Did you like what they did at the draft?
I did. I said listen, Bill O'Brien gets hammered, and rightfully so for a lot of reasons. Too much power. It's hard. I haven't talked to a former NFL coach or an NFL front office guy who says, and this is true to a man, and I'll leave their names out, even during interviews, so it's not a secret, that says Belichick's different, kind of like Jordan, that you can't do both great for an extended period of time, meaning the GM and the head coach, and you just can't. Because you got to worry about pro personnel during the season and this guy and contracts and salary caps. And, oh, I got to draft this guy. Oh, is this guy playing? And remember, Bill was also the play caller. So that's a third one. Jack Del Rio told me, he came into me and visited me. He's one of my better buds. And we played golf for a handful of days during the fall time. And, you know, after when Jack was, before he'd been hired by the Washington Redskins. And we sat and he was on the show. He said, Sean, listen, an offensive coordinator has about 4 to 6 hours of himself per day, or a defensive coordinator. He goes, or a position coach. He said, a coordinator has about 2 to 4 hours if they're lucky a day. A head coach needs to buy more time. Now you add general manager to that. There's not enough time in the day to do them all great. So they haven't, they got better on the draft. Their first two picks with Blacklock and Grenard were both good defensive needs, but they're young. And Bill O'Brien doesn't really believe in young players. He thinks this is a veteran season because, well, we haven't had an off season. So they should help, though, and they're going to need to help. But the defensive back end didn't get any better. And when you trade DeAndre Hopkins, you don't get better. You didn't get better. So the receivers who have been injury prone, they've got plenty to prove. On paper, it looks good. And then you running game, David Johnson, David Johnson's going to have to be the top three rusher in the league to validate this trade. He just is. And I don't know if he's a three down back on a continuous basis. I hope he is. He's a great guy. But no, the team got worse. The draft day was better for them. But when you consider all the overall trades and everything Bill gave up and Hopkins and the rest of it, the Texans are the third best team in the division as we sit here today. The Colts, Tennessee Colts, however you want to slice it, they're the first two. Deshaun Watson keeps you alive in all of it, and you got to be healthy. But no, they didn't get better. They got better on draft day. They didn't get better as a whole this offseason. You don't give up one of the top three or four best receivers in the league and all of a sudden decide, well, we got a backup running back in Arizona for him and a second-round pick. No, they are not a better team. Now, can they be? Maybe. Deshaun Watson's going to have to play out of his mind for them to go, and we know that. And if he doesn't, the Texans are going to be in a battle to try and make the playoffs, pure and simple.
What do you think Jonathan Joseph has in the tank at this point in his career?
Great leadership. A guy who can spot you, not a 65-snap a game guy, that we know that, but can move around and understand. Listen, as you mentioned before you teed up the question, the mental side of it. It matters. Now, you can be as mentally strong as you want, and if you have no zero game in you, then you're not going to make any team. There's enough game for him to specialize and very well respected in this town, in Houston, because of his ability to lead and to be a good example. And what happens is you get to a point that you recognize what your weaknesses is on the field as physically, because you can't, you're not quite as fast. Maybe your reaction time can't get out of a cut as much as you'd like to. But like the old veteran quarterbacks, you beat them to the punch. You anticipate better. Your pre-snap visuals are better. You understand formations, which means ramp up the study. The best thing Jonathan will bring is, other than understanding situations during a game, is Jonathan Joseph's ability to, during the week, teach you how to get ready to play. And don't underestimate that, because it does matter, because there are many times I've gone into a game on a Sunday and thought, I remember what Jim McMahon told me on Wednesday, or I remember what, you know, this veteran said, and it sticks with you, or coach. So the ability to understand the mental side is important, especially if you got enough game. But you're not an every snap guy, but he is a good guy to have on your roster, and young guys will learn a lot from a guy like him. If they're listening, two ears and one mouth, use them accordingly when veterans talk.
Sean Salisbury is with us. Jadeveon Clowney continues to be a rumor, and the possibility that he could sign here with the Titans. Is there a correlation in the fact that his career year in sacks at 9.5 is when Vrabel was the defensive coordinator there in Houston? Would that be the fit in your mind if Clowney comes here and is able to reunite with Vrabel?
I think it'd be a great fit because Mike liked him. Mike, you know, this talk, well, he didn't practice well. Mike says different. I trust guys who've played it, who coach it, who demand it, and who understand what to expect from a player every day. Listen, Clowney's not going to get as good as Clowney is, and boy, is he a great run disruptor, and is he a guy that you have to account for every snap to understand where he lines up. Now, remember, we pay guys in the league on sacks. We just do. He could be a specialist and get 16 sacks or be an every down guy and get 8 sacks. I'm talking about any pass rusher. You're going to pay the 16-sack guy more. Why? Because they're gaudy, and that's what they want. We want a disruptor in the backfield, maybe the second most important or at least held in high regard position, the quarterback and the disruptor. That's how we start teams now. And Clowney's a disruptor now. I think he probably overpriced himself. Not probably, he did. And he thinks he should be making Khalil Mack money. And the reason why he's probably not, a little bit of injury thing, but he's going to be fine from that, is the fact that Khalil's got the defensive player of the year in Gaudy stats. And Clowney has not had that. And regardless of not, but I wouldn't judge him on his sacks. He can sack the quarterback, but he is a major disruptor. He does make coordinators approach their game plan a little different in talking to people that have played against him. They just do. So, he'd be a great fit. Mike knows him. Mike knows his, not only his strengths, but his weaknesses and positions to keep him out of. I don't want Jadeveon Clowney in coverage. I want Jadeveon Clowney doing what he does, wearing people out at the line of scrimmage and making the quarterback think twice. That's what I want him to do. It'd be a hell of a fit. People in here in Houston sure as hell don't want it. They want him in Seattle or as far away from the division as they can get him. But, yeah, if there's anybody who understands what Mike does, and it's going to come down to there or Seattle, one of those teams probably, anybody who knows, Mike knows. Mike knows how to practice him, and Mike knows what to get from him. But I wouldn't judge people say, oh, he only had 9.5 sacks. There's a lot more to this game and towards creating havoc than sacks, pressures, a run game, disrupting, changing offensive game plans, all those come into play. And Clowney's obviously young enough and disruptive enough to get paid plenty of money, but also to make you rethink a game plan. He still does that to offenses.
Last one for me. We know that it's not just one player, but is he the last piece in your mind that puts the Titans in a really good spot to compete for the AFC South, whether it's with Indy, with Houston? I don't really count Jacksonville, but with one
right,
of those two
agreed.
Teams, is he that last little piece they need?
Oh, he'd just be an extra embarrassment of riches. I mean, you guys are already well. I don't have to go any farther than last year to show you, as you guys well know, that this Titans team with a break here, a break there, and a few plays, they may have been the representative playing in February too. So, listen, when you got teams like that that you haven't completely dismantled, that you've added to, you know, in your guys' draft, getting what I think it was Isaiah Wilson and Christian Fulton, if I'm not mistaken,
yep,
with the first two picks and need positions. And then you just add depth and you add a guy that you come in and you say, okay, this is a different game plan. We know what we got to do. Yeah, I think you can win the division without Clowney. So the question is, but the goal isn't to win the division. It isn't for Mike. I know it's not for you guys sitting and, you know, doing these radio shows and for the fans there. The goal isn't to finish in sixth place, because then we're back to the little league, everybody gets a trophy. If that's the goal, then that's the goal you'll get. Everybody gets a certificate. Hey, thanks for competing. You were one of 14 teams, or one of the last 13 teams that got in but didn't win it. And I know how Mike thinks, and I know that front office and the fans there are not thinking, let's just get in, and neither are you guys. So they can make the playoffs without Clowney and be a threat. The key is, and they've got some good young offensive weapons, and can Tannehill repeat what he did, you know, last year and even extend it where they push the ball a little more with those young weapons, and then you add Clowney to it? Yeah, of course, that just makes you even better. That's much to Phillips, you know, Rivers' chagrin and Deshaun Watson and coordinators. So I think you can get there anyway, but you don't want to get there. And Clowney could be a piece that takes you to another level, because regardless of how people think about him, the guy can play. And he's well-liked in Seattle. He is. And he is a good football player. So don't let the sacks be misleading to a fan who says, oh, 9.5, he's not that good. There's guys who get more sacks than Clowney that can't hold his jock when it comes to playing football.
Sean, we spent a lot of time on Friday's show, or sometime on Friday's show, breaking down Mike Vrabel's house at the draft on Thursday for the first round. Have you guys, how much did you spend breaking down who Bill O'Brien was yelling at when he was caught on camera?
You know what's crazy? Oh, we did, but you have to understand something. We expected, if Bill O'Brien wouldn't have hollered at somebody during the draft, everybody here would have said, is Bill soft now? Because when it comes to press conferences and the rest of it, he's as abrasive as it gets. So it would have been more, what the hell was Bill doing being so kind and not being angry at somebody during the draft? So, yeah, you've broken down Vrabel's house. We've broken down Bill O'Brien. Ah, there it is. There's the Bill that addresses the media when he's pissed every week and tells us, hey, we'll do it after we – matter of fact, I'm sure after people made a comment, Bill said he's going to go back and study the tape before he makes a comment on what he said when he was yelling at the person during the draft. I think most of us, you guys probably included, were more concerned about Cliff Kingsbury and Sean McVay's houses, you know. Kingsbury, ooh, kicking back with, yeah, you know – relaxed shoes on with his feet up, like, dude,
life goals.
Out there, I want to know what's going on in that backyard or that pad you got going on. So, yeah, the things we'll dream up to, but I thought the NFL handled the draft pretty damn good considering these crazy circumstances we're in. But, yeah, we went through that as we do every single thing we can find to milk out of sports right now. But this shows why you guys are a good show and why I think we are. We still find plenty of sports to talk about that isn't just a list every day. So it's a good thing.
Yep. Hey, always appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you down the road.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me on, man. Be careful.
All right, you too. That is Sean Salisbury. And he is, of course, the host of the Sean Salisbury Show and can be heard on Sports Talk 790 down in Houston. And we always appreciate the visits. We'll come back and finish up the hour with This Is What I Know. Tell us what you know next on 102.5 The Game.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.